Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. My name is Em and today I'll be speaking with Laura. Laura was diagnosed with breast cancer 10 years ago at the age of 29. She'll be telling us about some of the challenges she's faced since then, as well as her novel, Single Bald Female, which tells a story similar to her own. Laura, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Em.
So to start off with Laura, would you mind telling me just a little bit about your diagnosis? So where were you at in life at the time and how did breast cancer affect you?
Of course, yeah. So it was 10 years ago in June 2012. I was 29 years old and I was actually living in Argentina when I found a lump in my breast. I had had breast cancer in the family. My maternal grandmother had had breast cancer when she was in her 30s. So I did know that it was a risk and I went straight to the hospital and had an ultrasound and a mammogram, I think. And they told me that they thought it was a fibroadenoma and that it was 99% nothing to worry about. But if I still had it in 3 months' time, then I could potentially go back. And I was actually moving to Ireland. And when I got to Dublin, my family were kind of like, you should go back and get that lump checked out again. I was actually reluctant to pay the €60 that it costs to go to see a GP in Ireland. But I'm so glad I did. So I went back there and they said again that they thought it was nothing to worry about. But they put me through to the hospital for further tests. And 4 months down the line, I eventually got the breast cancer diagnosis. So I was glad that I had persisted. Fortunately and amazingly, it hadn't spread. So I was able to have surgery and then chemotherapy and radiotherapy. And I'm now 10 years on.
That was, I mean, at the time, so you were globetrotting at the time. Was this, were you living abroad or just kind of traveling at the time? Had you had plans to travel more? Did it kind of, you know, put a bit of a dent in those plans?
No, not at all. So I'd lived in Brazil, Argentina and Mexico. Oh, wow. As part of my I was working as a journalist, as a financial journalist, and yeah, I'd had a really great career and I was actually moving to Ireland starting a job at Facebook. So when I got the diagnosis, I moved back to my parents' house in Huddersfield to have my treatment at the Christie in Manchester. And then I did go back to Ireland for another year after that. But then I ended up moving back to London and I've been here ever since. So about the last 9 years or so. So yeah, I'd got a lot of the traveling out of my way in my early 20s and late teens, I guess. But I've also for the last 10 years really kind of managed to see the world. And I remember when I was having chemotherapy and it was that hot summer of 2012 when the Olympics were on, and just kind of wrote this list of all the places that I wanted to go when I was able to travel again, and crossed a lot of them off the list. So yeah, there's no regrets, I don't think, about anything I haven't done so far.
Well, I'm really pleased to hear that. And I'm also pleased to hear that you know, despite being in another country, you still had the kind of wherewithal and the knowledge of that family history to be like, actually, no, this is something I should get investigated. Especially as we sometimes hear younger women that sort of think, oh, you know, it's probably hormonal, it'll probably go. And, you know, sadly enough, we hear doctors saying a similar thing. Yeah. So I'm pleased to hear that, you know, you got that sorted in time. And you're now 10 years on from your diagnosis. And again, as we know from speaking to many other people on the podcast as well, that breast cancer doesn't actually stop having an impact when that treatment stops. So what were some of the longer lasting effects of your diagnosis and treatment?
Well, I mean, I've had lots of, certainly the treatment doesn't stop after chemotherapy and radiotherapy stops. Yeah. Like I was on tamoxifen, well, I've been on tamoxifen for nearly 10 years, and I've had hot flushes and aches and pains and kind of the usual side effects from that, and kind of going through the perimenopausal symptoms as well. But I think for me, probably the bigger thing has been psychological. And obviously, like, I was very naive at the time when I was diagnosed and I didn't know that much about it. But since then, I've met a lot of people who, you know, have sadly had secondary breast cancer, and I've learned so much about, you know, the really horrible stuff that cancer throws at us. So that's been difficult. But I think really it was being a younger pre-menopausal woman at diagnosis that obviously is much less common to get breast cancer when you're under 35. And at the time, there was really zero information available about egg freezing and about fertility. And that was something that really affected me. So I was unable to freeze my eggs, and I was also single. And so I then spent the whole of my 30s kind of going through this process of, you know, my friends were getting married and settling down and starting families. And I was in this place of going on dating sites and being like, what, you know, what do I do? I might not be able to have babies. And if I do, I need to have them when I'm younger. And I've also got this breast cancer thing hanging over me all the time that, you know, it could come back one day. And that's really scary. So it's affected me, but I haven't let it affect me so much that it's, you know, stopped me from doing things. So as I said before, I've done the travels that I've wanted to do, and I've done, like, I've tried to live for the day in so far as is possible, but obviously it's not possible to do that every day because you've got to earn a living and you've got to have a career and you've got to deal with all the stresses and strains of everyday life as well.
Yeah. Perhaps you'll go into this because I don't actually know the synopsis of your novel, and I'm excited to hear a bit more about it. So I don't know how much you talk about these struggles in your novel, which is a single bald female, which I really love the title of that, by the way. I think it's brilliant. It's such a cool cover as well. Sorry, it's audio, isn't it? Laura's just holding up the cover and it looks wicked. I wonder if you could tell me a little bit more about your novel. What's it about? How close is it to your own experiences?
Where do I start? So it's a novel about a girl called Jess, she's a magazine journalist. So there's some similarities there. And she is kind of smashing it at life. She's got the editor job. She's got a boyfriend, the flat. She's even got the cat, until she receives a shock breast cancer diagnosis at the same time as breaking up with her partner, who she thought she was going to settle down with. And it sounds pretty, pretty sad so far, but it's actually a really uplifting book. So it's about everything that she goes through after that diagnosis, the friends she meets along the way, the kind of grabbing life and living in the moment, following your dreams. And she also starts dating with a bald head, hence the title Single Bald Female. So it's got a lot of humor in there, as I'm sure anyone who has experienced breast cancer, whether a loved one or themselves, will know that alongside the tragic, horrible, sad side of it, there's always humor, and there's always silly, weird, crazy, funny little things to laugh at, which you've got to do when you're in that situation. So it's been described as Dolly Alderton meets The Fault in Our Stars for grown-ups, which I think kind of sums it up, really. I didn't want to write a memoir. I didn't want to just write about my own life. So it's got the cancer experience running through it, but it's not necessarily a cancer book. It's a book about life, and it's a book about living life to the full, and friendship. And it's Jess also goes through some of the things that I mentioned of kind of experiencing your friends all settling down and getting married or having babies, starting families, following their careers in your 30s, when her life is kind of stalled because she's experiencing breast cancer. So yeah, and it touches on fertility and dating and relationships and grief as well. So yeah, it kind of covers it all.
So it sounds like there's a lot of you in that novel, but I imagine probably writers quite often end up putting at least parts of themselves in their characters anyway. But I mean, this was something that was obviously very personal to you as a topic to write about. So did you find the process of writing, was it kind of cathartic to you? Were there any difficult moments where, you know, it almost felt quite tricky to revisit those parts, especially as you mentioned, there are moments of grief in there as well. Did you need to take breaks from it at times, or do you feel like you sort of, I don't know when you began writing this actually, but so I don't know how far on from your diagnosis you were, that you had enough distance between yourself to kind of think, oh, I'm ready to put this down on paper now.
Yeah, so when I was, as I mentioned before, when I was diagnosed, well, just before I was diagnosed and when I found the lump, I was working as a financial journalist. And I'd been working as a financial journalist throughout my early 20s, and never had any of my friends got in touch and said, oh wow, I love that article that you wrote about stocks and bonds or whatever, and or Argentine corn. And when I was diagnosed, I started writing a blog. So I had my own blog, which was called The Big Scary C Word. I had a blog for the Huffington Post, and I also had a monthly blog for Vita for Breast Cancer Now, which is almost 10 years ago. So we're going full circle here with this podcast. And I, when I started writing that blog, I just started getting so many messages from people saying, wow, that really resonated with me, or wow, I don't know how you're managing to be so uplifting and so like positive about your experience to, given what you're going through. And I had people saying, oh my god, you should write a book. And I think somewhere along the lines this kind of seeped into me, and I wanted to write a book someday, but at that point it was too raw, it was too new, and I was still going through so much stuff, so I didn't know what I was going to write. But my diagnosis was in 2012. I finished active treatment in 2013. And in 2016, I started writing the book. So I had written a post for the Huffington Post called Single Bald Female Seeks. And basically, when I was finishing my radiotherapy, I decided I was ready to start dating again because I'd been single for the whole experience. But I was like, what do I do? How do I put myself on a dating site? Mm. Do I like list myself with my bald head, or do I pretend that I didn't have cancer? And in the end, I decided, you know, I didn't want to meet someone who would potentially turn around after they found out about the breast cancer and be like, I don't want to be with you. So I decided to be honest, and I listed myself on the dating profile with the bald head, said that I was going through radiotherapy still and that I might not be able to have kids. And I had quite a positive feedback, and I wrote this piece for the Huffington Post, and it kind of went viral and got a really positive response because, you know, people, it could resonate with people, not just because they'd had cancer, but people with mental health problems or disabilities or, you know, other things that they might see as flaws, or they might see as reasons not to date them, but actually were reasons to, you know, love them, or, you know, reasons or things that everyone can resonate with and things that everyone could just sort of understand, because everyone has problems of some kind.
Absolutely.
So then 3 years later in 2016, I was like, Single Bald Female is actually a really good name for a book. So I just sat down one day and started writing, and decided that I wanted it to be a novel because I didn't want to write about the people in my own lives, mostly. So I went away and created this character and story, and just piece by piece, bits of it started kind of coming to me. And it took me 3 years before I got an agent, and then I think another year before I got a publishing deal with Pam Macmillan, and it was published earlier in 2022, and the paperback's coming out next year in 2023. So since I was about maybe 10 years old, 12 years old, I've always written a personal diary. So I've always been used to writing down the stuff, the personal stuff about my own life. And that's probably been the thing that I've always been most comfortable about writing, as opposed to stories about financial news or companies or even fiction. So actually writing about the breast cancer experience for me was the thing that probably that came most naturally. Mm. The harder part of writing a book was the made up stuff about, you know, who the ex-boyfriend was going to be and who the new love interest was going to be and who the friends were and what her family. You know, Jess in the book has lost her mother to a different type of cancer, and that was really difficult to write about. Fortunately, my mum is still here with us, and so that was happily made up. Mm. But yeah, so it wasn't necessarily cathartic. I enjoyed writing it. I found it massively challenging because writing 100,000 words is a huge challenge, and the resilience required when you're being rejected by publishers is really difficult, but it's hugely rewarding as well, and it's getting great reviews, and it's so lovely to walk into a bookshop and see my book on the shelf with the girl in the blue wig on the cover, as you've just seen. So yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, it definitely does, and it makes a lot of sense what you're saying there, especially is that I think actually having bared your soul in a way and put this work, even if it's not entirely autobiographical, but actually putting so much creative energy into something and then having to go through the rejection of agents and things. But I'm so glad you finally got your story published, and by a great publisher. So like you've got there in the end, and yeah, it sounds like that kind of that storytelling has always been something that you've done, even if it was in the form of a diary. And I think, it was that something that, and you say, you know, you, with your blog as well, you were obviously doing that throughout. Did you start that throughout treatment then, that you started writing?
I actually started it the day after I was diagnosed. Wow, so it was just, okay. I didn't even think about it. I think the reason why, so it started off as a Facebook blog when Facebook still had like a platform on it that you could, it was called Notes in Facebook.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
Then after a while, I realized that it was only accessible to my Facebook friends and other people were like befriending me on Facebook. And I just wanted it to be a public blog. So I turned it into a WordPress, and then I got the Huffington Post blog, and then I got the Vita for Breast Cancer Now blog. So, but yeah, it was just something that I didn't even think about the day after diagnosis. I had called my mum and a couple of my friends. And obviously those calls when you have to tell someone that you have breast cancer are really, really difficult. And it's something that I touched on in the book in a humorous way when Jess tells her friends and like the different reactions that people have, the stupid things they say, like, you know, you're going to get a boob job now and things like that.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to have that conversation with 50 different people. So that's why I decided to write a blog. But it's ended up being a thing that helps people as well. And when I sometimes occasionally go into the stats of my blog, I realize that people are still finding it when they search for how to find a wig or what to do with hair loss after cancer or about egg freezing and the kind of experience that I had there. So, I think it's good to share these things. Not everyone wants to share their breast cancer experience publicly, but for me, it was just like, it's the sort of thing that I do. It was what I could do.
Yeah. Makes sense for you to do that. And like you say, it's definitely helping people. And by the sounds of the sort of tone of the novel, I'm sure it could be something that for people who, like you say, have or haven't gone through a breast cancer diagnosis, could be something that's actually quite heartwarming. So I'm really pleased that it exists and it's out there. And I know you've also got a podcast, which is called Life in Food with Laura Price, but I know it also ties in with the cancer experience a little bit. So could you perhaps tell us more about that?
Yeah, it does. So after when I finished my cancer treatment, my active treatment, I left the job that I had at Facebook and I decided to go back to university and study magazine journalism. And I ended up becoming a food journalist, writing about restaurants. And that was part of why I was traveling the world throughout my 30s, eating in amazing restaurants, although it sounds more glamorous than it actually is. It was a lot of hard work as well. But based on those experiences, I met all these amazing people and did so many interviews with these incredible people. I don't know if anyone's ever watched the Chef's Table series on Netflix, but some of the best chefs in the world with these incredible stories that you don't necessarily hear about when you go to their restaurants. And I found that I had these interviews that went on for pages and pages, but I was only writing up, you know, 1,000 words or 500 words, and I didn't get to cover all of the amazing things that these people had said. And I'd always loved the medium of podcasts, and I wanted my own podcast. And I decided on this podcast called Life in Food with Laura Price, where I talk to different guests each week about food and their relationship with something else in their life. So I've done food and fertility with Kat Brown. I've done food and cancer with Chris Halenga, who founded the amazing charity Copperfield. Food and love with Dominique Krenn, who's an incredible chef. Food and motherhood with Anna Ross, another chef. Although it's not just chefs, it's also authors and charity founders. Did food and grief with the amazing writer Clover Stroud. So all of the conversations, all of the episodes kind of go back to food and mental health in some way, because obviously with cancer, with fertility, with eating disorders, with love, with grief, we're just talking about our mental health. We're just talking about our emotions and our feelings. So yeah, I speak to people and get these inspiring stories, but kind of from a culinary lens. So whether it's talking about nutrition when you're going through breast cancer treatment, which Chris talks about, or whether you're talking about overcoming grief and loss through wonderful food, or whether you're talking about your family food memories and kind of going back to the nostalgia of, you know, 80s eating Pop-Tarts or whatever it is, it's these just kind of joyful conversations around food.
I love that. I love that. I mean, I just hear it in the way that you're describing it, and I'm definitely need to go and listen to that immediately now because it sounds fantastic. But yeah, the joy that you're bringing out in people talking about something that is, you know, is inherently traumatic. And I know that as we've been speaking now, this conversation has been quite cheery, and you've sort of spoken about lots of the positive things that you've done. But obviously, you know, you went through a very difficult time. But I think it's really good on this podcast that we get to talk to people, especially so far out from their diagnosis, because I know a lot of the people, when they first find breast cancer now, it's possibly quite soon after they've been diagnosed, and they're still in a place where things might not seem very joyful at all. And to actually have people that are willing to share those stories and are willing to show that, you know, there's happier times ahead, is what I love about the Breast Cancer Now podcast and what it can offer to people. And it sounds like your podcast is doing something very similar in that, which is brilliant. And you know, speaking of, as we've just sort of mentioned, you are a decade out of that diagnosis now. If you could have gone back and told sort of 29-year-old Laura something that you might know now and you wish you'd known then, are there any sort of key snippets that you think you would have liked to have known and perhaps people listening might want to know now?
Yeah, there's a few different things. First of all, be kind to yourself, which sounds really obvious, but I think, like, when the pandemic happened, which I think a lot of us can compare to cancer diagnosis in some ways, we all put these expectations on ourselves of, like, I've got to write a book because I've got some more time now. Mm. Or, you know, for me, it was, I've got to write a blog, but I've got to make every day productive because I'm off work. And I just put these crazy expectations on myself. And if one day I just didn't feel like even reading a book or watching TV because I just felt so bad, I made myself feel bad. I made myself feel guilty. So I would say, if you can, try to remember, if this were your, try to speak to yourself like you would speak to one of your friends if they were going through this, and just recognize that it's a huge thing that's happened to you and you need to cut yourself some slack and just be kind to yourself, be good to yourself, take every day at a time. I would also say, when I was diagnosed at 29, I was very naive and I didn't do that much Googling. I didn't know that much about cancer, fortunately. And I would say to myself, stay that way, because now I know way more, and we use social media and Google searches so much that there's so much information out there, but it's too much for you to handle on your own. So just listen to what the doctor tells you, just get your information from one source, or if you're comfortable, then more sources, but just don't try and overload yourself, because it will be too much. And then the final thing I would say is, don't be afraid to advocate for your own health, which is something that Chris Helenga from Copperfield is really good at. In just, you know, if something doesn't seem right, or if you know that there's something wrong with you and you're convinced of it, but you feel like you're being fobbed off for whatever reason, then don't be afraid to ask for a second opinion. Don't be afraid to ask if there are more options that you could be given. And that especially refers to young women, premenopausal women who have not had kids and who want to have kids. You sometimes sadly need to be proactive when it comes to things like egg freezing and asking what your options are, because at the time, 10 years ago, I don't feel like it was, understandably, my oncologist and my surgeon were more concerned with keeping me alive and what my treatment was going to be. But actually, I'm still here 10 years later and I don't have kids. And I do have now, I live with my partner who's got 3 wonderful kids, which is incredible. But I think that, you know, you've got to be prepared that you might have a really long life. You hopefully will have a really long life, but you therefore need to have the quality of life. So you need to just be asking, not afraid to ask, and be proactive in terms of what's available to you, what treatments are there for you, is there therapy available to you? You know, there are actually so many incredible things that the NHS provides. Just don't be afraid to ask and write things down, because you'll probably forget everything once you go into that appointment and everything leaves your head.
Mm, those are all absolutely fantastic pieces of advice there. Before we sign off, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so. But you're very welcome to buy my book, Single Bold Female. I would love it if people would read the book and hopefully enjoy it, or maybe share it with someone that they think might enjoy it.
You can find Laura's novel, Single Bald Female, in bookshops or online. And if you'd like to hear more from Laura, you can follow her on Instagram at Laura Price Writes, or on Twitter at Laura Price Write. And you could subscribe to her podcast, Life and Food with Laura Price, wherever you get your podcasts, which I've already said I will absolutely be doing. But yeah, thank you so much, Laura, for just sharing your story with us, and yeah, telling us about everything you're doing, because it sounds fantastic.
Thank you so much, Em, and thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe via your preferred podcast provider so that you never miss an episode. Also, if you're able to, we'd love it if you could rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and perhaps recommend us to someone you think would find us helpful. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them.